Hello, everyone, and welcome. I'm Dory, the communications manager here at the Denver Audubon. We're an independent, nonprofit chapter of the National Audubon Society, and we believe that birds are not just beautiful, they're vital. They're messengers of ecosystem health, and when we protect them, we also nurture the well-being of our communities, the environment, and the planet. This podcast, The Curious Bird, is part of a larger effort to uplift what we call a voice of the sky, a growing community of people like you who feel called to speak up, act boldly, and care deeply for the future of Earth and all her wild beings. Our goal is to share the stories of inspired advocates and to reflect on the creativity, interconnectedness, and wonder that the natural world awakens in us. We hope these stories spark lifelong learning, deepen your sense of stewardship, and remind us all of the power of collective care. So, wherever and whenever you're tuning in from, thank you. We're so glad you're here. Let's take flight together and dive into today's episode of The Curious Bird. I could not be more excited to talk with my guest today. And I'm going to go into a little bit of a backstory, actually, because I think that how we met is just such a fun example of being a part of a global animal-loving community.
True.
It is, right? And so, first, this is Dave Johnson. Hi, Dave. How are you?
Good, Dory. Thanks for having me. This is going to be fun.
Oh, I'm so happy to have you here. This is going to be a great time. And prior to my time here at the Denver Audubon, I was the content creator and social media manager for the Santa Barbara Zoo. And while I was there, I made friends with zookeepers, other members of the zoo staff, and, you know, as with life, there came a point where I was looking to expand and where is next on my conservation journey. And so I was asking my friends, and one of my friends, his name is Daniel Snyder, and he is a zookeeper at Santa Barbara Zoo, and he used to be a zookeeper at the Denver Zoo, and said, you should talk to Dave Johnson. And so we got on the phone, and our first chat, I mean, we must have talked for 30 minutes and just laughed about animals and educating the youth and playing soccer, and it was just so inspiring, and it lit me up to talk to somebody else who was so devoted to animals. And long story short, 6 months later, I ended up at a job with the Denver Audubon, and now we're in the same place, same city, and this is actually the first time we're meeting in person.
Finally. Finally made it happen.
And I gotta say, you know, the energy is just as vibrant and exuberant as on the phone, and it just, you know, as soon as you walked in the door, it felt like we were old friends.
Yeah, that was a good hug.
It was a good hug, yeah. Well, I'd love to read a quick bio, if that's okay with you. Dave Johnson is a wildlife biologist, zookeeper, conservationist, children's book author, the executive director and co-founder of the Katie Adamson Conservation Fund, and a self-proclaimed animal nerd.
That sums it up really well right there. And the animal nerd part is the biggest piece.
And I got to say, that's the part that really got me. And I was like, I knew I love this human. So I would love to hear, in your words, what is an animal nerd?
When I describe it to kids, I go to schools, you know, with the kids' books, and I just make it a fun way to say anybody that's really hyper-focused on anything in their life. You know, a lot of times me growing up, nerds were just bookworms who studied a lot. But I made the nerd terminology be more inclusive of if you have something that you've been directed towards your whole life. And that's what you eat, breathe, sleep. That is what my parents would tell you is an animal nerd. That's, you know, it could be sports. It could be modeling. It could be teaching. Anything that you wanted to really do your entire life is why I'm an animal nerd. And you know, from when I was 4 years old, and since you're Audubon, you'll like this bird story. Mm-hmm. I pretended I was an ostrich for like 4 days and had to go to therapy, you know, and I wouldn't use my hands or a fork and I would peck at my food. And my mom was like, oh my gosh, you were a disaster. I wanted to send you back and get a new child. But the doctor, you know, famously said he's going to outgrow this. Mm-hmm. And my parents to this very day are like, you never did outgrow it. You're still that animal nerd, you mm-hmm. know, taking pictures of burrowing owls and coming back to the truck to see my mom, and she was in tears because she was like, oh my gosh, you're 50 years old and you're clamoring around out the prairie dog town taking pictures of burrowing owls. You're still that same four-year-old that I had to take to the therapist. I was like, guilty.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's kind of, you know, where my animal nerddom started, mm-hmm. and it just ended up being in school, that's all I wanted to write papers about. And I only wanted to do book reports on animals, and only wanted to study animals. And so I did really well in those classes and pretty poorly in all the rest. So I was very much aligned to this, you know, somehow in my genetic code to just mm-hmm. be an animal nerd.
Yeah. Well, based on your definition, I'm definitely an animal nerd. And I saw that story of the ostrich in an article about you, and another moment where I just handed my heart in joy, because when I was 4 and 5 years old, I would pretend I was a dog for days at a time, would refuse to be on 2 feet. There's a story. My dad for a little while was a cop, and he came in to introduce me to his sergeant, and I ran in on all fours and proceeded to lift my leg on the desk of his sergeant. And my dad's just like, oh, it's my kid.
She'll outgrow it.
Yeah, exactly. And famously never did.
Welcome to the club.
Yeah. And I was thinking about that, you know, the doctor for you and my parents, how important is it that we had people that just said, let them be that?
Yeah.
Do you think?
Yeah.
You know?
That was very important. And my parents, even after college, they wanted me to be a lawyer or a dentist or something that I would make money. And I think I was probably late 20s, and my mom was like, you know, you're the happiest person that I know, mm. you know, and maybe you're not, you know, able to afford a lot of the stuff that a lot of people want, but she said, you have such a joy about everything that you do, mm-hmm. and she said, it's really beautiful, and she said, I'm so happy that you resisted, you know, us trying to make you go in a different direction. She said, you knew better than we did. And so that made me feel really good that, you know, you have that kind of backing.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And how lovely of an experience to be given that trust and mm-hmm. honoring that you mm-hmm. devoted yourself to something that brings you joy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, constantly. And still does. You know, it's still such a huge piece of my life. I don't have kids. And so when my parents would come visit, I'd be like, well, come meet your granddaughters, the three elephants. This is all you're going to get.
I hope my grandchildren are elephants.
This is Mimi, Dolly, and Candy. Yeah. You can meet them, Mom and Dad. And this is, you know, it's 30,000 pounds of grandchild.
Yeah, 30,000 pounds to love, you know.
See if my brother can top that.
Oh, that's amazing. And that's one thing that I have loved about our connection is the joy you emanate about the natural world. And so I would love to know, how have you maintained and cultivated that relationship from the time you were born till now?
A lot of it comes from community. Mm. And I think a lot of what you bring, when you show that joy and engagement, and you know, and you live that life in front of people, it only brings all these good people into your realm, mm. like yourself. You know, when you put that out there, the Daniels in the world mm-hmm. that have been in your life will say like, oh, you need to meet. And he's actually created synergy with so many different people because yeah. he's like, oh, these people need to get to know Dave. And Dave needs to get to know these people. And so I think along the way, the collaboration, the community is so is so inviting, and they give me back so much energy.
Absolutely. And you do so much work with the youth and education here in Denver, globally. Why is it so necessary that we take time to educate the youth and inspire them about animals and conservation and nature?
I feel like I have I only have a window of opportunity to teach. Mm. And I think that's what really drives me, the teaching component. That's why a zoo was such a good fit. Even with the wildlife biology degree, I wanted to teach more than I wanted to do field work. Mm-hmm. And so when I started doing field work in Alaska with bears, I was like, I missed people. And I missed being at a nature center or a zoo where I could continually talk to kids and teach up, because they will teach their parents and their aunts and uncles about everything they've learned at your facility. Mm-hmm. And so for me, passing along that positivity, passing along that that desire to make sure that we take care of other species that we share this planet with, you know, I don't think we're destined to just take over this place and just and run amok. I think we need to be the ones that are taking care of our fellow creatures and not the ones that are destroying it. And if you can make the next generation, if you can see, when I go in a classroom, there'll be 30 kids there, but you'll know the three that you've really touched. You know, they'll come up, they'll ask questions. They're bright-eyed. They're like little Daves. You know, they don't want the session to end because it's so fascinating to them. And I think that's where I get a lot of joy, is creating that spark.
Absolutely. And I find that kids have such an innate connection to our interconnectedness. Mm-hmm. And to give them a space to expand into that and to see that they can continue to expand into that their entire lives is so wonderful.
Yeah. And you can see it.
Yeah.
You can see it. It's amazing seeing it in their faces, seeing it in their eyes, their expression, you know, and getting a hug from these kids after a class when they come up and you feel like, wow, that is so much energy. This kid now is going to make a difference.
Yeah. And it's so inspiring, so beautiful. I was a teacher in wilderness education for 6 years. And so I would take students on trips around the state of California, anywhere from 3 to 5 days. And to see their growth and awe within just an hour of being outside and that sparkle in their eyes of being a part of something and wanting to be a part of it was my favorite part of it. And I remember there was this one time, I ended up at a camp that was a few miles over from where I went to camp as a kid. And I remembered there was a waterfall I stood under. And I had this group of kids and I was like, are you willing to just see if we can find it? I can't promise we will. I don't know what the trail is like, but I would love to take you to the same waterfall I went to. And they were like, yeah, you know.
Let's go for it.
Yeah. and we found it. Mm-hmm. And this group of kids, they went through that same portal, if you will, which was standing under this freezing cold waterfall. And one of the young girls came out and she said, it's like I stood under that waterfall and I came out forever changed.
Oh, wow. That is so beautiful. Oh, she gets it.
She gets it. And it was so beautiful and so profound that it stuck with me for almost over a decade now. And they get it, and how wonderful that nature is, this thread we can weave, you know, laterally, but also through the generations too.
That's amazing. And similarly, I had a Denver Zoo Explorer Scout that worked with me at the zoo and got to take her on, you know, trips and worked with her. It's through the Boy Scouts, but they can spend 7 years at our zoo from age 14 to 21, just experiencing animals. And then we would take them to Yellowstone or the sand dunes, and we'd take them camping over the summer. And amazingly, I was at the zoo long enough to not only take Jenny, but then years later, my last summer in Yellowstone was spent with Abby, her daughter. Oh. And so talk about the generational impact, you know, and I just took her parents. Jenny's mom and dad, Abby's grandparents, just went to Borneo and Sumatra with us.
Wow.
Planted trees and saw orangutans in the wild. So you're looking at a zookeeper have an impact on three generations of people in this family, because they were open enough to to, you know, want that spark.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I love that you said you brought it to this generations of family who are open to this experience, because it takes all of us. The experience mm-hmm. takes all of us. And so whether we're in the conservation realm or not, it requires a receptivity of people too.
For sure.
And so if you could speak to that, the importance of receptivity as in a conservation action.
I think being open for that messaging is really mm-hmm. important. I think a place like Denver, you mm-hmm. find a group of people who are definitely more open to mm-hmm. to those suggestions, you mm-hmm. know. And I'll give you one example of somebody that two ladies that I met that were very closed. Mm-hmm. And I was speaking at the Capitol, and I had taken off my Denver Zoo clothes. I'd put on my Katie Adams and Conservation mm-hmm. clothes, and I was taking a long lunch to go talk about ivory and rhino horn mm-hmm. and how it shouldn't be purchased and bought in the U.S. And I was on, you know, at the Capitol on stage with a microphone talking, you know, to several hundred people. And these two ladies had made these signs about me, against me being a zookeeper, and how horrible zookeeping was and elephant mm-hmm. keepers were. And I was just like, I was mortified. I'd never mm-hmm. had to speak to anybody where they were, you know, jeering me. Mm-hmm. And but, you know, we had a whole group of people that were there to learn about elephants and rhinos and conservation from me. But I had to really focus on them, because it was a personal mm-hmm. thing for me. Like, all right, they're saying that I'm a bad human, and I'm going to just take this and turn it around. I'm going to talk about how much I love these elephants mm-hmm. and how much I do on my own time in Nepal mm-hmm. and Tanzania and trying to get people to love elephants and trying to open them up mm-hmm. where you have many people at the zoo that are already really open to you yeah. and want to learn. But these two ladies were teachers, retired teachers. Mm-hmm. And I got to talk about everything. And, you know, sometimes I get emotional mm-hmm. talking about that stuff. And it's hard not to when you love something so deeply. And they could hear my voice crack. Mm-hmm. And they put their signs down. Mm. Then they moved to the back of the crowd. And I could still see them. And their anger turned into curiosity.
Yeah.
Which then turned into a willingness to be open.
Yeah.
And they afterwards, they came over to my table and they bought some of my kids' books and they said, "We're sorry, you know, we misjudged you. Can we help? What can we do for conservation?" So that was a huge moment for me about how powerful it is to turn somebody into a non-believer, into somebody that really wants to accept, you know, that you are genuine.
Yeah. That is such a courageous thing to stand and expose our hearts.
Yeah, and that was definitely, that was how that resonated that day. It was, I was not going to stop until I had made them change teams.
Yeah, absolutely. So how is that experience for you balancing the love and vulnerability with ferocity?
I think that's a really good call. I think you have to be mm-hmm. able to bring both.
Yeah.
I think you have to be, and when you love something so deeply, mm-hmm. you know, you've got that, you know, mama bear instinct, mm-hmm. you know, when somebody challenges you. Yeah. And I definitely have a spark, you mm-hmm. know, that I can rally. I'm a nice guy, but mm-hmm. But when those ladies were treating me that way in front of everybody, it was definitely something that made this inner bear kind of erupt yeah. onto the scene. And mm-hmm. I was just like, I'm gonna change their opinion before mm-hmm. I leave this day. But mm-hmm. I think it is a really good mix of, mm-hmm. and I think people appreciate that, you yeah. know? You can't be a pushover. Absolutely. You can't just be this bunny hugger, mm-hmm. you know? And you can't just be tearful and emotional about this passion, but you actually have to be able to defend it mm-hmm. and fight for it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where we're at right now, is a lot of us are going to be asked to fight for what's right mm-hmm. and for what we believe in. And mm-hmm. I think, you know, going on this podcast and rallying with you mm-hmm. is what people want to hear, You know, I think it's what they want to be a part of.
Yeah, a togetherness, a togetherness, a unification.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And not just hugging, but sometimes it's roaring. Sometimes we have to howl together to get our point across.
Yeah, to be more in tune with our animal. You be your ostrich, I'll be my dog. We'll go around the streets. you know what I love about that story with the two women is there was, you know, a ferocity from you and a defensiveness. But it wasn't any forcing. It wasn't any trying to change anyone else. Mm-hmm. It was, I am going to stand fully in who I am. And that was the change.
Mm-hmm. And I had a lot of people come up to me who saw exactly what happened. And they were like, wow, you know, you really put yourself out there and you really turned them over. I said, yeah, did you see him leave with my books?
So good.
Let me get a picture with you two and the signs. This will be something I talk about for a long time.
Absolutely. And as you should. It's a great example for many things. You know? And I relate to that from my time at the Santa Barbara Zoo and there being just this binary assumption of if you work for a zoo, it's that, you know, it's bad. You're not good to the animals. And obviously, there's a spectrum, and I think that it goes back to the openness as well and listening as a tool as well for how we can do better in the world without assumption. And of course, making informed opinions and decisions, but also showing up with that openness and willingness to listen, and willingness to change their minds. And that, you know, is something from this story that they were willing to change their mind. And that's important too.
I go to talk at some college campuses and a lot of times half of the students there are pro-zoo and half are anti-zoo. And I embrace all of that because I'm like, I wasn't always a zoo believer.
Same.
I was not always, I never thought I would want to work at a zoo.
Same.
Where they kept animals in a facility that they couldn't be in the wild. And then I realized as I grew up and, you know, learned more and more about animals and nature and how I could be impactful, everything started to change. And I realized like, oh my gosh, you know, these guys are helping breed black-footed ferrets so we can get them back to the wild. You know, they're helping with Arabian oryx. These animals would be extinct without zoos, you know. And when I would go to zoos, and you're right, it's a spectrum. There are some really, really good zoos that do a lot of really good things. And there are some that are more into it as a money making. And I understand that. But when you're a zookeeper and all you want to do is take care of your animals for 40 hours a week and then make sure that the wildlife that they are ambassadors for, that they are thriving on the planet. And when you talk to most zookeepers, and that's what the KACF tries to do, is get these zookeepers in positions where they can go help with passion projects, help them be out in the field. Maybe if you take care of sea turtles at the aquarium, you want to go release some hatchlings in Costa Rica. You know, maybe you want to see your first elephant ever in the wild because you've worked with them for 15 years and you've never been to Africa or Asia. And that's what's so empowering, is to help these guys also find their voice, especially some of these kids in Denver.
The kids.
Yeah. The kids that know both of us, you know,
wow. Oh, we're going to have like elephant kids running around, orangutan kids, you know.
I'm a spotted toey.
We could just go on this topic forever. I'm just picturing like this wall of kids, like, you know, protesting down the street. Some are roaring, some are trumpeting, you know, some are have made these invented flying things so they could fly like a kestrel. You know?
I only hope we can see that sometime, maybe on Earth Day.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Maybe there's a teacher out there that's planning this for us.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, yeah. Oh, I love it. So I would love to touch on that a little bit more, is your work with children. I'd like to talk about your authorship as a children's book author. And I got to say, the first one I saw, which we talked a little bit prior, was Zoodiac. And first of all, that lit me up on so many levels because I was like, animals? Astrology? I love when people fuse two creative things mm-hmm. and fuse them together and make it seem so easeful. And so I would love to just hear more about all the books you've written and Zodiac as well.
Zodiac Kids has been my favorite to date, just because of that concept of having, instead of, you know, having it be a zodiac sign that somebody mm-hmm. tells somebody at a bar.
Totally.
I'm a Sagittarius, you know.
Hey, that's my sign.
Well, I'm a Taurus.
Great.
And so, but for me, I was just like, oh, wouldn't it be fun for the kids to be able to say, well, what are you? Mm-hmm. I'm a tiger.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a September baby, you know, and if you're May, mm-hmm. like myself, I'm a wolf,
mm-hmm.
you know, that was one of my favorites growing mm-hmm. up. And mm-hmm. so for me, being able to do that with kids and get them excited, and then us have some conservation impact with all 12 of those mm-hmm. animals. Mm-hmm. So we could tell little Susie that, you know, oh, you know, you're January, you're polar bear. We just did a school talk up in Kaktovik, Alaska. We donated books. We saw 70 bears. And we're hoping to help with human polar bear conflict mitigation,
yeah.
you know, up in Alaska. So those are some of the things that the Zodiac Kids kind of provided. But the whole book idea started when I was in Alaska. I was a bear biologist, and I told you I was missing kids
yeah.
before. I was missing teaching and working with another bear guy that didn't want to be around people.
Mm-hmm.
I was in my tent, and we were in the snow, and I was writing poems about animals with kids, and this one name kept sticking out. The sassafras was my favorite tree in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And when I worked with kids at a summer camp, I was their wildlife guide.
Mm-hmm.
I would have them go find the leaf that smelled like root beer, and mm-hmm. that was the sassafras.
Mm-hmm.
And so I came up with this this little girl that was going to be my muse. Instead of preaching from an old man Dave, you know, podium, I wanted to use this young girl named Sissy Sally Sassafras. And so I wrote poems about Sissy Sally Sassafras wearing green because she believed so much in the planet and conservation. And the sassafras was her favorite tree. And so that's when I wrote The Elephants of Denver.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all about our elephant program changing from free contact to protected, changing from our girls to the bulls,
mm-hmm.
and building this, you know, millions of dollars facility, Toyota Elephant Passage at the Denver Zoo, and getting the community excited about that. And then when I started going to Nepal to do conservation work before Toyota Elephant Passage was open, we started meeting young rhinos that had been orphaned from their moms being killed, poached for their horn.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of those was Narayani. She was found on the Narayani River. So I thought the next book in the Sissy Sally Sassafras series, very hard to say. thanks for the tea. That's helped me. so that Nepal book had Sissy Sally Sassafras joined by this young female rhino named Narayani mm-hmm. to help save the animals of Chitwan National Park.
Wow.
And so so we were going every year to Nepal, just building this concept of conservation with the community. Then the fourth book just came out in December, Dory, and it's called I Am Katie.
Mm.
And it's changing over from the heroine in the books from a fictional mm-hmm. character into Katie Adamson
yeah.
and her passing on the baton of conservation. And I Am Katie is all about Katie's story as a zoo explorer scout and about her her passing to cancer,
mm-hmm.
but her being able to us rallying around her name and impacting all these researchers and biologists and conservationists around the world, and many of them women who can really use the help getting to do the things that they do. Like one of them, Doma in Nepal, she lost her mom to a rhino
mm-hmm.
when she was young. And instead of being bitter about that, she's turned that into a passion to help people that lose family members to wildlife conflict. And so Doma is in the book. She's in I Am Katie. She's one of our real heroines now.
Yeah.
And she helps us navigate a lot of human wildlife conflict over in Nepal. And it's written in four languages.
Wow.
So now we can take it. It's in Swahili, mm-hmm. it's in Nepalese, it's in Spanish and English.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can have not only impact with these kids in our country, but you can take it to places like Kenya and Tanzania, take it to Nepal. It's in their alphabet. Mm-hmm. So even if you take it to villages where they don't speak or write English, it's written in their alphabet.
Wow.
And so for me, loving that teaching piece, loving the kids and wanting them to love animals as much as I do, having kids' books that could go on mm-hmm. teaching long after my voice is silenced mm-hmm. was really important to me.
Yeah. I love your embrace of creativity in the conservation work that you do through the children's book, through the projects you have globally that we've talked about, from dance tournaments, soccer tournaments, to bees and apiaries as mitigation for human-wildlife conflict. And I would love to hear your opinion on the role and necessity of creativity in conservation.
I think creativity is going to be what saves us. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to think outside of the box. And I think allowing also people, we come from a Western philosophy, but we're working with a lot of communities and people and wildlife from around the world.
Yeah.
And what we have to do as harbingers of change, I think, is to allow people to teach us mm-hmm. what works in their mm-hmm. community. And maybe it's, you know, I played soccer growing up. I love it. You know, we talked about that before. I love going to tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
I love kids playing for Rhinos mm-hmm. when they're playing the Lions in the finals. Or I love watching mm-hmm. the elephant team play the B team mm-hmm. and watching all these villagers come out and support them and know that they're supporting conservation. You know, you look at Lucy King in Kenya, and she was trying to figure out how to help elephants and people coexist.
Mm-hmm.
And she did an auditory study. Mm-hmm. where she was playing all these things to see what would most negatively impact elephant behavior. Ended up being swarms of bees, made them run away, made them leave an area, made them, you know, hightail it out, you know, ears out, tails up. And she was like, wow, this is something maybe we could utilize.
Yeah.
And it became something that we started building beehive fences, you know, and to keep elephants and humans apart. And so it saves elephants' lives. It mm-hmm. saves human lives,
mm-hmm.
and it actually helps bees as pollinators, helps their crops. That's creativity.
Absolutely.
That is the essence of having somebody problem solve and give you the data, the science, mm-hmm. the creativity to move this forward. And now it's cutting down on human-elephant conflict by 80% in East Africa.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So think about that and what that lady has done. Mm-hmm. for conservation just by thinking outside the box, you know?
Absolutely.
That's pretty special.
Absolutely. One spark of an inspiration, and we're helping multiple species, mm-hmm. humans and mm-hmm. animals, for now and the future.
It's quite amazing when you do let the people that should be creative, allow them the ability, give them the chance mm-hmm. to build upon what they're passionate about.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think that goes back to what we were talking about as well with youth education and leaving space and cultivating that practice early of following your imagination and inspiration mm-hmm. in kids.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Allowing them to be, you know, the next Lucy King.
Exactly.
Allowing them. And that's so important too with the young girls in mm-hmm. some of these countries that we go to. You know, in Tanzania, when we started off with soccer and bees and everything there, there was one ranger mm-hmm. that was, you know, a chief warden. She moved up, Diana Kijureshi. She's in Kijureshi, Diana Nchambe. And of the 30 chief rangers in Tanzania, there was one woman.
Mm.
And you watch her speaking, you know, in a male-dominant society mm-hmm. like Tanzania. But she has a voice now, and she has all these young girls mm. looking up to her. So the more stuff we can do with elephants and bees and stuff with Diana Nchambe, the better it is for everybody involved. So mm-hmm. why not send a team of females over there?
Absolutely.
Elephants, bees, and humans, yes. All matriarchal.
Yeah. Absolutely.
All female dominant.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So let them all work together. And it was pretty amazing watching Diana shine with our group of really strong women
yeah.
coming out of the zoo and out of you know, Colorado Parks and Wildlife, and being able to work with all these different, tearing down these silos like we talked about before.
Mm-hmm.
It should all be this collaboration,
absolutely.
You know, and everybody wins,
mm-hmm.
Bees, elephants, and people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love that. And, you know, I want to touch on what you said about how allowing different voices, different perspectives to teach us, to let others be our teachers. And in that, to also let animals be our teachers. And I think that just one example to just pull what, from what we've just talked about is sometimes embracing the matriarchy and doing things in a collaborative way. Mm-hmm. And with that, what is something that you would say animals have been a teacher of for you in all your years?
What animals have taught me most is family. Mm-hmm. And friendship. And mm-hmm. some of the animals that I'm most akin to would be like wolves and, mm-hmm. and wild dogs and lions and elephants. These animals that, you know, have a culture mm-hmm. and pass things down to their young and are so intelligent, so familial, like the orcas, mm-hmm. you know, that work together to fish or to catch mammals mm-hmm. out of Seattle, the elephants that you go and see and mm-hmm. And watching, you know, them collaborate and welcome a new calf, and how all the young females are smelling and learning how to be mothers. Mm-hmm. So I think animals have taught me that we need to grasp relationships mm-hmm. and community and hold on tight mm-hmm. to the family and friends. And then moving out here to Denver, you know, I created an amazing cast of family and friends that. In 27 years, it's really astounding, mm-hmm. all the people in our community. And I think we have a crash of rhinos. We have a herd of elephants. Yeah. You know, I've got my people here. And I think that's what the one thing that animals, one of many,
yeah.
many one of many things that animals have taught me is how to work well as a team and mm-hmm. how to collaborate.
Yeah. So I would love to now honor Katie. Would you be willing to share the story of Katie and how Katie Adamson Conservation Fund came to be?
So Katie, I first met her, she was in seventh grade, and I think coming to the zoo and learning about animals and wanting to help out. And she became a Denver Zoo Crew teen at 13. And then came on to the Zoo Explorers. Mm-hmm. She couldn't join us till she was 14. You have to be a freshman in high school. And so this young gal, her family was down in Littleton, and so she was coming to these Sunday meetings, and she was obnoxious. She was a know-it-all. She was an animal nerd, and so full of herself. And she would bring her best friend, Jordan, to all of our meetings, and Jordan is now a zookeeper at the zoo. Katie, along her path, she rode horses and loved horses, was in Western Airs, her and Jordan both, and I would go and watch them, you know, at the stock show and stuff, and watch them carry their flags and ride their horses. And when Katie was a freshman at CSU studying wildlife biology, she got a Ewing sarcoma. She got a very bad diagnosis of a tumor that was going to be very aggressive and hard to beat. She fought it off for like 7 years and came up and down, you know, just that, you know, if you've had family or friends with cancer, it's a tough roller coaster of a journey. And she finally succumbed to her cancer at 25. And, but she just wanted to go to Nepal. She wanted to be a zookeeper. Mm. She wanted to finish college at CSU and get her degree. She didn't get to do any of those. Mm. And so when we're at a point where I'm writing kids' books, we're already taking people to Nepal, we already see something there. But what do we do with this? Is this just a little fun, you know, vacation for animal nerds? I think Katie's passing was a wake-up call. Mm. I think it was me needing to do more, needing to figure out how do I have a bigger voice, you know, how do I reach more people, and how do I do it to honor Katie at the same time, you know? Mm-hmm. You can't let somebody like that pass in mm-hmm. vain. And I think her alignment with me and her passing made me very ambitious about what we could do as an organization and a fund. Mm-hmm. We should start a nonprofit, mm-hmm. is what I thought. We should write books you know, not just sell them at the zoo to people and be part of AZAC, our Zookeepers Association, but we should take this on a bigger stage. Mm-hmm. And so I went to her parents, me and Ray. You know, my husband is big part of the fund, a huge support network for me, and he wanted me to feel very comfortable doing this. And so we went to John and Colleen, and we said, we want to use your daughter's name and have a conservation fund. And they were like, we would love for you to. Thank you. That is so wonderful. But we can't be a part of this. We're so hurt. You know, we just can't join you. Mm-hmm. Now, 11 years later, almost, they've been to South Africa, Nepal, Costa Rica. They've been on our board. They come to all of our events. And, you know, seeing the two of them see their daughter's name in Nepal on a sign in this forest, you know, thank you, Katie Adamson Conservation Fund. Watching their faces, I think they realized how special and important this was, and that their daughter's name, her legacy, Dory, is going to continue.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's been life changing.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I think, you know, people, you have that survival, you know, guilt, you know, like how is a young girl like that taken from us? But when you take it and you rally around that loss and turn her somehow into this phoenix of conservation, that she rises up and changes the world. Yeah. And, you know, when you can raise $4 million in the name of this young girl and you can make it rain around the world, you know, which I love to do, you know, and you can see these young girls who are now working with step eagles in Nepal or working with jaguars in Costa Rica, and they're all doing it wearing KACF shirts. And one of the rally cries in the book is, I am Katie. And that's what I say in my piece, and Lamech says from Tanzania with Elephants, I am Katie. And Carolina says from her jaguar pedestal in Costa Rica, I'm Katie too. We're all Katie. So that's Katie's story. And as you can see, it's hard for me not to still feel impact from that loss. And also a sense of gratitude to her and to her family. Because, you know, if you're open to it and you're wanting to make a difference and you're just sitting there like thinking like, what can I do? As one person, and how can I bring this community together? And in her loss, we created something so dynamic.
After you finish saying that, I'm like, wow, I don't even know what to say. And what I do want to say is thank you. Thank you for honoring Katie, for honoring women. Thank you for honoring humanity. Thank you for the work you do. Thank you for inspiring me. Thank you for the phenomenal difference you have made on both an intimate and global level. Thank you.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
And I would love to know in this 11-year-old lifetime of the Katie Adamson Conservation Fund, do you have any really resonant highlights that come forth?
One that's very special that you'll love as a soccer lover is we started a tournament in Tanzania for conservation and had these young men playing soccer. We climbed Kilimanjaro for black rhinos. We were able to fly a rhino in from a European zoo and have her on Tanzanian soil, having black rhino babies in Tanzania in Bokamazi National Park. And, oh my God, that's so special for a zookeeper in and of itself. But we started this soccer tournament, and it's since 2016. So, and now these players are being coached by two guys that were playing when I got to watch them in 2016. So now Id and Rama are their coaches. And now we've had a young man play from L.A. Mm-hmm. on the Rhino team that they won the championship last summer. And he's invited three players to play in Sweden at the Gothia Cup. So I get to see so much brought forward from a mountain climb years ago that has resonated and changed so much that now Id is a coach. He's on our he gets a living stipend for coaching these players, and he's their art teacher. He teaches them wildlife art, and then we bring the art back and I mail it to donors. Mm-hmm. So they get kids art from Tanzania. That's how we pay it forward to these donors. They get an original artwork piece from these kids. And so I'm going to be in Sweden in July with Id watching these players play in Gothia Cup that has 80 countries represented in their 50th year. And so pretty special to be able for me to align a sport that I loved with my passion for conservation. And I think that is just one instance that, that if I was looking at the bigger picture of the KACF, you know, that's just indicative of what we do and what we bring and what I'm so proud of.
Yeah. I love how everything you speak about has such a weaving to it, and everything we've talked about, you know, like the quality of love. And when you act from love, it propagates more love. And when you have the courage in creativity to fuse things you love, it expands the love. Mm-hmm. And so it's just, there's a really gorgeous weaving that you have created through the Katie Adamson Conservation Fund. And I feel that in that, you are completely honoring the essence of the earth and animals too, because they are this beautiful web of interconnectedness that will always be connected.
Thank you so much. That's probably the nicest compliment I've ever heard about our organization, because I mean, that is so key to everything we're doing. So thank you. That's that's very, very honoring to hear you make that connection with me here. So I appreciate that.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for being here. And I'd love to direct the conversation a little bit, but I like to weave too. So I'm going to weave it in with some other weavers, which is birds to me are such weavers of the planet through how they migrate thousands of miles on the breath of the planet. And so as we at the Denver Audubon, birds are our gateway to a greater appreciation and action for nature. I would love to hear if you have any stories of your relationship or work with birds throughout your travels.
Well, it's come a long way since I was an ostrich. I actually have worked with birds my whole career too. And in Kentucky, I was with the Salado Wildlife Education Center. Mm. So I spent a year there, and I was hacking out peregrines after they had been so decimated by DDT. And we were hacking them out in Lexington and Louisville. And I was bringing out education birds, bald eagles, owls, kestrels, just to talk to people about the importance of raptors and stuff. And so for me, the bird as part of that weaving has been very important. And we just got back from seeing African penguin colonies in Cape Town. And we visit there every year that we go, and we work with SANCOB really closely. We've sent zookeepers down there to help with what is called a chick bolstering project. Mm. And if eggs and chicks are abandoned by parents that have to feed too far from shore, they take them in and they put them in an incubator, and they have zookeepers come and take care of them. And so when we sent Stacy Johnson years ago down to work with them, she got to release like 36 birds and a raft of penguins. And to have a penguin keeper, you know, feeding them and taking care of them and then releasing them to the wild, I mean, oh my gosh. Oh. She could hardly get through her talk with us one night. She was, you know, just really heartfelt emotion that just, you know, encaptivated the whole crowd. But knowing those birds are now under 10,000 pairs, when just a few decades ago there were 100,000 breeding pairs, and we got to actually watch one of their penguin wardens, Vard, they had decided that two eggs needed to be taken. They were out in the sun. You know, we were just there. It's their summer. And they're like, we've got to get these eggs out. So we watched Vard go and take them to Sandcob. And this was from a lady that started this in her bathtub back in like 1968. The year I was born, she was cleaning oiled penguins in her bathtub because she wanted to make a difference. So for me, you know, honoring a woman that was ahead of her time, you know, already protecting penguins in the late 60s.
Yeah.
And now seeing how few of them that are left on this planet. And working with Penguins International, I don't know if you know Katie Propp, you know, our penguin connection here in town. She's just amazing. And she's doing March of the Penguin Madness right now.
Oh, I know March of the Penguin Madness. It's amazing.
That's Katie's baby.
Okay.
And so we work with her and Sandcob. And so for me, wherever we go, there are going to be birds in the environment that need protected. But even here in Colorado, we went out with Norm Lewis from the Denver Museum of Nature and Science, and he took us all to a sage-grouse lick.
Oh, wow.
And we went out and sat from 5 a.m. until sunrise and got to hear these sage-grouse booming before we could even see them.
Yeah.
And such an iconic bird species of the West. And so there's so many great bird stories out there. They're such a key ingredient to the ecosystem health, you know, that sometimes they get overlooked.
Absolutely.
And so having people dedicated to birds and bird conservation is wonderful.
But I love them as this, I'm trying to think, I don't want to like put a label on them, but just like you said, they're everywhere. And so from anywhere, they offer this connection to nature, whether you're out in Costa Rica or Africa or looking out your window or driving down a highway and there's a red-tailed hawk flying above. Or for me here, every morning and evening, I hear the geese. I don't even need to see them to take that moment and feel a profound connection with nature. And I think that is so wonderful. And birds have really played a special role in my life. And from my time at Santa Barbara Zoo, I had a special relationship with Monty the penguin. And he was actually in March Penguin Madness
two or three
years ago. So just all these little synchronistic things that just I think animals and communities bring, like we're talking about, you know, synchronistic or consequence of our actions that we choose because of animals in love or all of the above.
Yeah. I was talking to our social media manager, Heather Schwartz, yesterday about like, I just don't get it. You know, I said, I'll send you rhino calves playing together at a water hole and it'll get like, you know, 40,000 views. And I sent her a red shouldered hawk that was in South Carolina. It was in the parking lot of my mom's memory care facility. But that got like 5.7 million views, just a red-shouldered hawk, you know? And so that bird connection, you know, I'm like, how does that beat out two little rhinos? And Heather was just like, you know, birds resonate with people.
They do.
You know, and people shared that.
And I think that there's such a quality of, how do I express this? Like they're so close. They're right here. So they give what you're saying, that intimate communal connection, but then also this awareness of possibility that they're right here, but they can go everywhere.
Yeah. They're here, but they have the power that we don't have. You know, that's a powerful thing too.
Yeah.
They can take off and fly. So yeah, so you are in an amazing position, you know, with turning on people about our bird friends. And so I'm excited about what you do with this.
Thank you. I'm excited too. And I think they, you know, it's evidence in how many stories they're in. Birds have a way of evoking that creativity that we talked about because of the possibility of being in the sky that is there. They're so familiar yet so different. So it helps us to stretch and expand our imagination and to bring play to, and I think all animals do this, but to bring play to the quality of our life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a good way to look at it too.
I love how much animals make me laugh. I find them so beautiful, so profound, so wise, and also so funny.
Yes, yes. When you need that, you know, yeah, in your exactly. life, you can easily mm-hmm. get that from the animal world.
Absolutely. And while we're on this topic, and we'll start wrapping up soon because we've had such a great conversation, but there was a quote I saw that I wanted to ask you. It was on your About for Katie Adamson Conservation Fund. And it was a little snippet, a little phrase I took, and it says, "We laugh and create change." And I loved that you had that in your website. And I would just love to hear from you, your opinion on the importance of laughter amid the change.
Oh my gosh, you should know that from just this hour.
I know, together, I know.
How important it is. And for me, leading these trips, you know, mm-hmm. from with a comical side, you mm-hmm. know, and enjoying nature and wildlife. And we started back at the zoo, we started comedy nights mm-hmm. for conservation. And so already we knew back in 2000, mm-hmm. you know, that we were going to tie in, you know, laughing and, yeah. And joy with conservation. And so we would have a local comedian come into the zoo. When you bring in that fun nature, mm-hmm. I think people learn and they don't even understand that mm-hmm. they've learned something from you that day. Mm-hmm. You know, when you can make them laugh and have a good time, then they go home, it's like, wow, yeah. you know, that was fun.
Yes.
I wanna do something with Mr. Dave again. Mm-hmm. I wanna go to the zoo, or maybe we should go on one of his trips. Mm-hmm. He looks like he would be a riot.
Yeah, you are. I can confirm.
Out on the planet, you know, let's go with mm-hmm. him. And I think that's goes very far mm-hmm. into how you build the community.
Okay, so I gotta know, is there a really funny story you could think of right now, something you witness on your travels with the animals?
This is one of our trips to Nepal, uh-huh. and it's one of my favorites. And Ray is not very fond of the outdoors as much as I am, or hiking, or, you know, he calls them my death marches. You know, he's like, he would never climb Kilimanjaro with us, or a 14er, but he went to Nepal for the first time, got out of his comfort zone, and we got him out on the trails, and Bardia Boot Camp, we call it, in Bardia National Park, and we hike from like 7 to 7. We've got a bull elephant and must we're trying to avoid, first off, so everybody's tense. Mm-hmm. He destroyed a vehicle right beside the camp the night before. And so our guide's trying to pick the way that maybe he's not, and we're smelling him. Uh-huh. And as we walk down this trail, avoiding this bull elephant must, a rhino comes out of the forest and charges us. And we're like, the people in line are like Three Stooges. We're all hitting each other. And a water bottle crinkles in somebody's backpack, and the rhino's like, ah, and it runs. Instead of towards us on the trail, it runs through the brush.
Okay.
And so... so we're all like, okay, no elephant, no rhino. We're alive. We're okay. We go out into this meadow where there's all this elephant grass. And they tell you, mm-hmm. Dory, to run if an elephant, if he were to come out, and you run in zigzags. And so you're on this little trail with 15 foot high grasses on the side. So your run would be like, you know, you couldn't really, you couldn't really take big turns there. And so we're like, oh, we're kind of in a death channel here. Mm-hmm. And as we stop and smell that bull elephant again, we're all stopped there just with this look of like, we can't run. It's just one way or another. And all of a sudden, this crashing happens behind Ray. And I didn't know a human could make a noise this high-pitched. It was like, it would have broken glass if there had been glass around. But he screamed because it was right behind him. And I know he was envisioning trampling and headstands and ivory. But it was actually three jungle fowl. There were actually three wild chicken that flew up behind him. And so we all knew what it was. Uh-huh. And his face, you know, and he had just had the worst day out there in the field. And Chuck is with us, you know, and Chuck is laughing so hard. He's got tears. Mm-hmm. And Ray is like, oh, shut up, Chuck. He said, there were three chickens out here. They scared me. And Chuck said, no, there were four chickens.
Oh, I just love that animals can bring us to tears in every meeting through joy and through laughter.
Oh,
and
yeah.
How it's just amazing.
Take us in every direction.
In every direction.
But always coming back to that core value of love and respect mm-hmm. and honor mm-hmm. and dedication to their cause. So it's going to be fun fighting this fight with you. Welcome
sure
to Denver.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. And speaking of love and honor, respect and dedication, you are a shining light of that. And I have felt that through and through in our conversation as well. So thank you for your time.
I'm so glad we got to be face to face.
I know.
So much better than
it's
a phone
so
call.
It's so much better. But final thing, I would love to let people know how they can follow along or contribute to the Katie Adamson Conservation Fund. So where can people find you? How can they contribute?
Website is www.kacf.eco. Mm-hmm. And a big thing that we've got going on this summer, if people would like to become engaged, we annually go to the Denver Museum of Nature and Science.
Mm-hmm.
So we have Katie's Night coming up August 23rd.
Mm-hmm.
And so if people can come join us, listen to our speaker talk about conservation. We have a silent auction, a live auction,
amazing.
Usually a comedian, and we have a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So if people can come and actually meet those people in the community that are making a difference, mm-hmm. that's what we try to highlight. So that would be fun. But yeah, go on our website, mm-hmm. go on our trip, buy our books. If you're a teacher or a parent, have me out to your school.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's a great way. I'm going to be home for 3 months. I'm going to be twiddling. I'm not going to have anything to do.
Yeah. Yeah. We're excited to have you here for 3 months. I'm excited to see how much Denver changes in those 3 months you're home. Oh, well, and I would love to. That event sounds amazing. So
yeah.
I'm going to put that in my calendar.
Yeah, definitely come play.
Yeah. Wonderful. Well, thank you again.
Thanks for having me. This has been awesome.
Oh, thank you. It has been awesome. Thank you for being here, Dave. And thank you to all you fellow animal nerds.
Join us.
Yeah, join us. Our arms are open. We appreciate you. Thank you for tuning in. And until next time, have a great one.
1 This has been The Curious Bird. Thank you to our guests, our editor, Joe Escanos, and to you, our audience, for your time, curiosity, and openness. If you'd like to see these conversations continue, we would greatly appreciate your consideration in donating to our nonprofit, which you can do at the link in the episode information. Your generosity helps keep the conversations and our work flowing. To the bird lovers, the bird curious, the heart-centered, and any and every listener, until next time. When we meet again to build bridges, heal from separation, remember interconnectedness, and hear from the real inspired voices that are creating change in service to coexistence.